Let me say again that we welcome each one of you who is new with us today. There are a lot of new folks, and there'll be a lot more new ones here next week. But I suspect that you are the most important new folks that we'll have here this year, because you're the new folks. You're the freshmen who've come to us. Can you raise your hand? Let me see how many of you are here that are new. Raise them high. All right. Well, there'll be a lot more at the next hour and then a lot more in next week. We're thankful for your presence. We're thankful for your commitment to Jesus Christ. Did we mention Bobby Lofton in the announcements? Bobby Lofton is in the Baptist Medical Center at Little Rock. She's extremely ill. I suspect if it were not for her fighting attitude, she would already be dead. Her two precious daughters are with us this morning, and we just reach out to her with in a way that we don't really know how to reach out, but she's suffering from, I suppose, terminal cancer. And let me urge us to remember her in our prayers and remember her children. And let's be mindful of this good woman. Her faith has been an example to us in the last year, and we need to give thanks for her. Well, I want to read to you from Joshua 24, just very briefly. In fact, we'll be turning at various times to various passages. Let me just tell you about this very brief incident. The children of Israel had been brought into the land of Canaan. They had fought for years. Joshua was getting old. And he had something to tell these people that had to be said. And he told them simply this: "Now therefore fear the Lord and serve him in sincerity and in faithfulness. Put away the gods which your fathers served beyond the river and in Egypt and serve the Lord. And if you're unwilling to serve the Lord, choose you today whom you will serve, whether the gods of your fathers that they served beyond the river or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we'll serve the Lord." Joshua was calling upon these people to make a decision. He was calling upon them to use the most often used and the most often abused faculty of the human race, and that is your faculty to decide. I know if you came to Searcy in a car, you experienced this particular experience. You came across certain roads on your way here that were just little dirt roads. You didn't stop each time and look at your map to see if you were supposed to take one of those dirt roads down through the woods. You knew that wasn't it. And then there were other roads that you took that were perhaps county roads, paved, but gravel kind of roads, and you knew really upon just one glance that's not the road. But there were some major intersections that had I-35 or I-40, and maybe you came through Dallas and went through the great flyover there where they have all those different places that you can go and from which almost you cannot return. And those things require some real serious decisions. They may make you pull off to the side of the road, get your map, find out where you're going, and then decide which one of these major intersections you're going to take. Well, you know, life is like that. Life has a whole lot of just little dirt roads that you don't think anything about at all. You know what you're supposed to do. You know that that's not the direction you're going. But they have some more important roads also and some decisions to be made. But just one glance or two makes you know, no, I'm on the right road. That's not where I'm going. But occasionally you come up to some real major decisions. You come to some forks in the road that make you sit down perhaps and maybe pull off to the side of the road of life for a moment and check your destination and check your road map. And young people, those are the most important places in your life. It's those great decisions that determine really not only what you are, They determine what you're going to become. Or they show what you are, all right. They show your raising. They show your upbringing. But more than that, and more frightening than that, is that they determine where you're going. And it's this that I want to talk to you about today. Life is so much like that. And young people, you're at that point right now, today. In your past life, the last 18 years, and I'm mainly going to be talking to freshmen, if you'll pardon me. And these people who are resident members here, we accept you as our special charge for about 9 months out of every year. You're our special people. You're our babies. We love you. We just about devote our time and attention to filling your needs. And in filling your needs, we fill our own. But I just get to these old folks by coming through you young people. That's, you know, you can't talk to an old person. You've got to do him like the woman did who sent her little boy to school and said, "Johnny's a very sensitive child. If he misbehaves, slap the child next to him. He'll get the message." And these old folks here, you know, you can't just talk direct to them. You got to go through the freshmen. So that's what I'm doing. I'm talking to freshmen mainly today, but to all of us. In the last 18 years of your life, you made few of your decisions that were really important. Your parents made most of your decisions. And you may be here because your parents made a decision for you to be here. If I were to ask you how many of you came against your will, you'd be surprised how many of you would have to raise your hand. But I want you to do something before your parents leave today. After having been a part of this service and after having heard this singing, after having gotten just a wee taste of what good things are here, will you take your dad by the hand and shake his hand and say, "Daddy, thank you for making me come." And love your mother and hug her and say, "Mom, I didn't want to come, but I can already see I'm glad I'm here." Will you do that, please? But in the past, your mom and dad made most of your important decisions. But young people, it's on you now. The time has come. Welcome to the adult world. This is your life. And you're here now beginning to make important decisions. And you're going to have to make those decisions, and nobody else can really make them for you. You know, the ability to decide is one of God's most precious gifts that He's given to people. The opportunity to decide is one of America's most cherished traditions. And the responsibility to decide is one of God's most sobering responsibilities that He's placed upon us. You have the ability to decide. Use it. You've got the opportunity to decide. Be thankful for it. You've got the responsibility to decide. Face it soberly, because the monkey's on your back now. You know, decisions involve every facet of our lives. Some of them are major, some of them are minor. Sometimes we get the two mixed up. Sometimes we get confused over what's a real major issue and what's a minor issue. Like the man that said of his wife and he, of him, of the two, he said, "I make the important decisions in our family and my wife makes the unimportant ones." Really? Yeah. He said, "She makes the minor ones and I make the major ones." "What do you mean by that?" he said. "Well, I decide whether we're going to war with Red China, and I decide the national debt and all those things, and she decides whether we buy a new car and a new house and those smaller things." She really had him deceived, didn't she? I was in a house over in Memphis about 6 or 7 years ago, and a young boy about 17 years old and a little girl about 16 had married. They made a decision that was so important, but they made it at a time when they weren't really able to make it. And there she was. She was pregnant. I went to home to visit them because she was in the process of having a miscarriage. And here was this little 17-year-old boy and his little 16-year-old wife. She was as white as a sheet, bleeding to death. Didn't seem to be able to stop it. The doctor felt like she would lose the baby. I thought, "You little ninny," as I looked at him, "you haven't got enough sense to come in out of the rain. Here you are standing in such a position as this." But he came around and he said, "I tell you, I've got a real decision. I've got a real problem." I thought, "Well, maybe there's more to you than I thought. What is it?" "Oh," he said, "the electric fuel pump on my car went out." And he said, "I don't know whether to replace it with an electric one or not." I thought, what in the world's the matter with you, boy? Your wife's in there white as a sheet. She's on the verge of losing your baby. And you're worried about whether to replace your fuel pump with an electric one or not? You see, he'd gotten them mixed up. He forgot what the major decision was. So many times we do that. Well, when I was a freshman in college at Memphis State, some teacher stood up before us and said, the most important decision you're going to make this year is what to wear to the freshman ball. I got so mad, I thought, goodness, I've got more sense than that, and I'm just a student. And you mean you're going to be teaching me what to wear to the freshman ball? Well, that was ridiculous. You know, you're going to be making some major and some minor decisions right now. You're going to be making some minor decisions. You're going to be making a decision about, and I tell this to freshmen every time they come in, some minor decisions, though they are, you girls are going to be making some minor decisions about how often to change your sheets in the dorm, but that's minor for girls. You just look at that, you know, it's like those dirt roads. You just look at it and you change them. For boys, it's not quite so minor. In fact, when it's not a question of changing sheets, it's changing sheet, singular. They just have one. And they have to make a decision as to which semester to change it in. One boy reported that his sheet was stolen. But on investigation, it had just stuck to the mattress. Oh, it's pathetic. You boys are going to have to make a decision about how often to date. Whether it's once or twice during the year. And you think that's funny. Before the year ends, you girls won't be laughing. It's going to be a real serious matter with you. And I do everything in my power to get these guys to just simply date. You know, you don't have to make the decision about exactly who's going to be your wife. Just go out there and date some fine Christian girl and go on and enjoy it. But these are some minor decisions that you're going to have to make. You're going to have to make some major decisions also. One of which, of course, is the most major decision. You're going to have to decide whether you're going to follow Jesus Christ. In reality or just in play and name, that's a major decision you're going to have to make. You're going to have to make a major decision about whether you'll return next semester to a Christian college. You'll have to make a major decision about your mate eventually. You're going to have to choose a girl to live with. And girls, you'll have to choose a man to live with for the rest of your life. You're going to have to choose about whether you want to be a member of this congregation. I think that's a major decision. It was a major decision for me some 5 or 6 years ago. I think it'll be a major one for you also. You're going to have to decide which one of the many fields of study will be your major in school, because it's going to determine the rest of your life. Some of you may find yourselves choosing vocations that simply mean that I really can't be this and be a Christian too. Some of your vocations mean that I'm at the mercy of my employer. If he says work today on Sunday, I work whether I like it or not. If he says fly today, I fly whether I like it or not. I go. And consequently, my life really won't be mine. And as a result, I won't have any control over giving it to my Lord. I'm going to have to be at the mercy of my employer, and he may not even be a Christian. Well, if that's the case, then a major decision in your life will be, what am I going to major in school? What's going to be my vocation? Oh, you're going to have a lot of these decisions. And let me tell you this, decisions precede all rational actions. You know, very few of our actions are the results of spasms. You know, sometimes you have a spasm and your muscles just... Well, that's not often. The first time I ever said this, the tennis coach came out and he said, did you ever see yourself play tennis? But not many of your actions are the results of spasms. They're all the results of real, genuine decisions. You remember reading about Julius Caesar's record of his conquering Gaul? That famous statement, I came, I saw, I conquered. And then in the same book of Joshua that we read a moment ago, there was a man with the name of Achan. And Achan made a statement after having stolen a Babylonian mantle, some pieces of silver, and a gold wedge. When it was finally narrowed down, and he was the one that was pointed out as the culprit, they said, all right, now give glory to God. Why did you do it? And he made this very sad but true commentary on many, many lives. He said, when I saw it, I coveted it, and I took it. While decision is written all over both of these statements. I saw, I came, I saw, I conquered. I saw, I coveted, I took. decision is written over all, both of these, and it's written over all over them. This year, you're going to make some decisions. You're going to make some actions. You're going to do some things, and decision is going to be written over all of these things. This year, you may choose to be lazy. But if you're lazy, it's because you choose to be lazy. If you cheat, it's because you choose to cheat. If you're loose in your morals, it'll be because you choose to be loose. Nobody's going to make you. You're going to make that choice yourself. If you choose to be late to class, well, that's all right. You'll be late, but it'll be because you choose to be late. Every year, every service of this congregation, 75 to 100 people come in 5 or 10 minutes late to these worship services. Well, you know why? It's because they choose. 99% of them choose to be late. And most of the time, the same people are late all the time because they choose to be late. So this year, as you make some moves, as you move out on campus and as you move out in the community, you're going to say simply that I have chosen to either cheat or to be dishonest or to be immoral or to be lazy or to be late. I choose to do this. And you may think that it only hurts you, but it doesn't. Your decisions hurt other people. You know, Achan, when he stole that gold wedge and the Babylonian mantle and the money, Achan's daddy was there. He had been summoned. Achan's grandfather was there. That tribe was there. At least he was of that tribe. And if the granddaddy was still living, he was there. But Carmi, in all likelihood, was there. That was Achan's dad. And when Carmi and his children all stood up there before Joshua, and Carmi didn't know what was going on, then Joshua said, Achan, you're the man. I wonder what Carmi thought. That's my boy. God help me, how did I fail him? You see, what Achan forgot was that he got his father's name. I want to read something to you. You got it from your father. It was all he had to give, so it's yours to use and cherish for as long as you may live. If you lose the watch he gave you, you can always be replaced. But a black mark on your name, son, can never be erased. It was clean the day you took it, and a worthy day to bear when he got it from his father. There was nothing of dishonor there. So make sure you guard it wisely. After all is said and done, you'll be glad the name is spotless when you give it to your son. I wonder what Carmi thought. And I wonder how Achan felt once he realized that he had disgraced not only himself, but he disgraced his dad. There are going to be a lot of decisions that you young men will have to make. And you're going to disgrace maybe your dad if you go a certain direction. Or you can take that name that he's given you, and you can also polish it, and you can keep it clean and keep it shining so that your dad will not be ashamed of you, that he'll be proud of you. But more than that, so that you can be proud to give that kind of a name to your own son. It's so important, the decision that you make. You know, decisions actually mold your life. When I think about this, I think of Joseph, who was away from home when he was 17 years old. He's just about your age. Joseph, ripped out of his father and mother's breast, taken to a pit, thrown into the pit. People took him off into Egypt and sold him. He didn't have a mama and daddy who took him here in their car and took all of his little belongings and put them in the trunk, you know, in the hi-fi set and brought him here and made his bed. And the mamas complained about the dorms maybe not being as clean as she'd like it for her little darling, and that wasn't there. This boy was sold into the hands of a tribe of Bedouins who drank goat's milk and ate goat's cheese and belched goat milk into the face of the people that were there. That's the kind of people, dirty, sand ramblers, smelly. And they paid money for this boy, and then he went off in the hands of strangers and went into Egypt. 17 years old. Then here came this hussy, this siren, this loose woman, threw herself at him. But who was to know? Everybody was out of the house. He was away from home. And here came this beauty and said, I'm yours. Come lie with me. Don't you know that Joseph could have thought, well, by the way, nobody will know this but me and you. But Joseph had more sense than that. Joseph made a decision. He said, how can I do this thing against God and against your husband? I can't sin like this. And he didn't. He made a decision, and it influenced the entire rest of his life. He was the kind of boy that was laying those stepping stones to the prime ministership of Egypt. And he did it way back down yonder when he decided that he was going to keep himself pure. I think about Daniel. And Daniel, it says, he resolutely determined when he was carried away into Babylon that he was not going to defile himself with the king's dainties or drink his wine. And he said, God blessed him. I think about Moses, the boy who remembered what his mother and father taught him about his heritage. He remembered that he was one of the Jewish people. He was not an Egyptian. And when he was about your age, perhaps, or older, he realized that he had a name to live up to. He realized that he had a heritage and that he was responsible. And so Moses made a decision based upon what his mom and daddy had taught him. I also think of such men as Judas. I think of such men as Circe's own Dr. Rogers, who decided some 2 or 3 years ago that he was going to murder his wife. And so he did. What a contrast. Between that man and Moses, there was a young man one day that went off to school, and his parents sent him away, having trained him the best they could. And before he left, his mother told him, "Son, I'm going to be praying for you every night at 10 o'clock. And he got on the train and went to school. And one of the first weeks he was there, someone came by his room and said, "Come on, we're going to go paint the town red. We've got some women, and we're going to get some liquor, and we're going to really have a blowout." And he went with them. And they were walking across the town, getting ready to go to this place of ill repute. And the clock began to strike on the square. And it struck one and two and three, and he didn't really think much about it, but then he began to listen. 4 and 5 and 6. And he began to slow his step, and he began to think about what his mother said. And 7 and 8 and 9. And when it struck 10, he just stopped dead in his tracks. And he looked down and thought a moment. And he said, "I can't go. I can't go." And he turned around and went back to his room. He made a decision. Young people, decisions are the fork of the road that determine your entire future. We have a man with us today, Brother Roy Taylor, who tomorrow will be 90 years old. Brother Roy, would you stand up for us? Can you get those old legs to work? Could you stand up for us and let us see you? This man will be 90 years old tomorrow. And long time ago, thank you, Brother Roy, a long time ago, he made a decision he was going to be a Christian. And Brother Roy Taylor is the most regular member of this congregation, I guess. His old legs don't really work like legs ought to work. He almost has to talk to them every time they move just to get them to go places. He has to make a decision every time he gets up. But he made a decision a long time ago, and he's entering now into the last years of his life, and he's going to exit this life before long, but it'll be through the door that he determined a long time ago when he decided to be a Christian. And you know, decisions are just like that. I remember when I was 17 years old, and I decided that I was going to sell my car. I was going to go to David Lipscomb High School for my senior year, and I was going to give my entire life to preaching the gospel. I remember that as well as if it were yesterday. My daddy remembers it also. And he's told me many times in the years that have followed, he said, "Jim, that was the most important decision you ever made." He knew that that was a fork in the road. And he saw the way my life was going before. And he saw me then come to that fork, and he said, "I watched you make that decision. That was an important decision." A young lady came to my office some 2 or 3 years ago. And she said, "Brother Woodruff, I've got to talk to you." And so I said, "All right." So she came in and sat down, and she said, and I knew what it was about. I knew it was about her courting. I didn't even know the girl. Never had met her, but I could tell by the way her expression was. I knew it was about her dating, about some man. She said, "Brother Woodruff, it's about a man that I'm dating." And I said, "Yes." She said, "He's 10 years older than I am." Well, I thought, That's not insurmountable. That might not be completely a barrier to your relationship. But then she said, Brother Woodruff, he's not a Christian. And then she said, Brother Woodruff, he's been divorced twice. And I told her this. I said, all right, you've got a decision to make. But let me give you something. Let me tell you, right now you're as free as a bird. You're not married to him. You don't have any responsibility to him as a wife. You can go wherever you please. You can do whatever you please in the name of the Lord. It's up to you. You're free as a bird. I said, you marry that man and have two or three little children swinging on your skirt and crying and wanting you to be a mama to them, and have that man who's not a Christian, who's been divorced before, who's 10 years older, you do that and then watch how tied down you are. You better make your decision wisely. 2 weeks later, she came out this front door and she took me by the hand and she said, oh, thank you. Thank you. She said, it's over. I'm free. I'm all right. She made a decision. And you know what? Great decisions aren't made on the battlefield. Great decisions are made before you get to the battlefield. Great victories are won not on the battlefield. They're won in the mind of the general way, way, way before the battle takes place. They're won in his decisions. That's why I wanted to get to you today with this message. Your decision is so important today. That's where you're making your decision for 40 years from now. Decisions that you're going to be called upon to make this year. They're not going to be made down there. That's where the destination is. The decision is back here at this fork in the road. That's what Peter meant when he said, decide to make Jesus Christ the Lord of your life. 1 Peter 3:15, it's usually stated like this. Set Jesus Christ apart as Lord in your heart and be ready to give an answer to everybody that asks you about this hope that lies within you. There was a young girl across the street from us in West Columbia, South Carolina. When she got to be 16 years old, I called her to me. I said, Martha, I want to talk to you a minute. She was a precious girl. She was one of our very best friends, and she loved our children, and she took care of them. And I said, Martha, they're going to be boys wanting to date you now. You're a pretty girl. I said, they're going to be boys whose morals aren't what they ought to be. And you're going to have to make some decisions. And I said, Martha, don't wait till you get on the back seat of a car to make that decision. I said, you make your decision now. Make Jesus Christ the Lord of your life right now. Make that decision here so that when you get on those dating situations where boys are going to wanting you to do things that you ought not to do, I said, be ready. Already make that decision. Have it already registered. Have it already logged. Have it there in your memory. Have it in your mind. Set Jesus Christ apart as Lord of your life. Brother W.B. West tells about two boys that he knew in Nashville, Tennessee. And he said that on one particular Sunday, these two boys were standing on Church Street in Nashville, Tennessee. One of these boys, at the time when it was right to go to church at that hour, he said, I'm going to go to church this morning. The other boy said, no, I'm not going. He turned around and went to a liquor store. Brother West says that years and years and years later, these two boys who had become men met in Memphis, Tennessee. One of them was an upstanding Christian, a shining light to the world. The other one was a drunken bum. Would you like to venture which one was which? Well, it's fairly obvious, isn't it? That decision was made way back down yonder on Church Street in Nashville, Tennessee. There are two other boys, probably, and their names are Legion, and they're not legendary, they're real. One decided to go to a Christian school. The other decided to go to a state school. That's not conclusive as to what the outcome will be, but it's fairly indicative. But there's another decision. There are two other boys and two other girls, and their name is Legion too. Both of them came to a Christian school. But one of them decided just to kind of ride along with things. The other decided that he's going to get to know Jesus Christ. And the outcome of that is fairly obvious too. Young people, what are you going to decide? You're going to have to make some decisions. You're going to have to make some decisions about life. But you're going to have to make a decision about death, too. You don't have the choice of deciding whether or when you'll die, really. All you can decide is whether or not you're going to meet God, prepared or unprepared. Elvis Presley made that decision last week. He didn't decide when and where he was going to die. He did decide, though, whether he was going to meet God prepared or unprepared. You're going to have to decide what you do about Jesus Christ, too. Once there was a royalty procession in England. The king was coming. In fact, a whole procession of kings was coming by. And there was this line of people, you know, on both sides of the way. They were standing there watching, and they'd been standing there for hours looking for this procession of royalty to come by. And they had made a decision. They were going to go there where the action was. And don't you know that just about the time that the kings turned the corner, a dog and another one began to fight. And there was this terrible dog fight. And the people stopped watching the procession to watch that dog fight. And they watched it until the dogs just either one killed the other, they just finally stopped fighting. And they looked up, and the procession had already gone by. Now, let me tell you something. You've come to where you can see the procession of royalty. Jesus Christ is going to be paraded before you every time you're here. You're going to see His Majesty. It's going to be here. You may not see it because you may be looking at dog fights. Something just that insignificant may take your mind away from the real issue at stake. Will you decide to give Jesus Christ a chance? Will you give Him a fair hearing? And will you? You may not be ready this morning to respond in faith to become a Christian. And if you're not, then don't respond. But you may be ready to say, well, by the way, I've horsed around all my life, and I've fiddled around, and I've supposed to have been a Christian. I haven't lived like a Christian should. I'm ashamed of the way I've been living. I've been a disgrace to my parents. If they knew how I'd been living, they'd be just totally chagrined. But I'm going to give Jesus Christ a fair hearing. And I'm not going to get here and get caught up in all these dogfights and all these peripheral trifle things. I'm just not going to let that keep my mind off seeing Jesus Christ. Don't miss seeing His royalty by just being detracted by a dogfight. You're going to have to make some decisions today. I've kept this today light. I've kept it to hopefully simple so you can see what your real issue is today. You're going to have to make some decisions. So welcome to the adult world. This is your life. Here you are. What are you going to do with it? Today, we're going to encourage you just simply to be sober, to be realizing that I'm going to have to make some decisions. This is it. Now's the time. The monkey's on my back. What am I going to do? And answer yourself this question. Where will I be when I get where I'm going? You'll be where you are because you decided to be there. Exactly. All right, all together now, and we're going to be standing now for the first time, and we're going to be going all through this year. We'll be standing on many occasions. One of these occasions will be yours. It'll be your hour of decision when you respond positively. It may be that this one this morning is. I don't know. You know. If you're not a Christian, will you come confess your faith in Christ and be immersed into Him? If you are a Christian and you want to rededicate your life, would you do that and make that decision while we stand and sing?